And welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Tom Hall on this Monday afternoon. Very glad that you're with us. If you've driven up Calvert Street in Mount Vernon over the last many months, you've noticed that a landmark on that street just north of the Baltimore Sun Building has been undergoing a major makeover. It's out with the old and in with the new for Center Stage, which years ago was named Maryland's State Theater. The Everyman Theater moved into their new building on Fayette Street just a few years ago. The following season, the Single Carrot Theater christened their new digs on North Howard Street. And last year, the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company moved into their beautiful new theater on Redwood Street. So since then, they've begun tearing up the building next door on Redwood Street, and soon they'll be occupying even more freshly spiffed up space. Well, Center Stage will complete their renovations in the next few months. They've already moved into the renovated Pearlstone Theater with their current production, Les Liaisons Dangereuses. Today, we're going to talk about what's going on at Center Stage, from what they've imagined the physical space to be to the imaginative new ways that they're connecting theater artists with theater lovers. Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, was appointed the artistic director of Center Stage in 2011. He's an award-winning playwright, director, actor, essayist, and broadcaster. He joins us in Studio A. Kwams, always a pleasure. Good to see you.
Great to be here, Tom.
Gavin Witt is here as well. He's the dramaturg and the associate director at Center Stage. Gavin, a pleasure as well.
Always my pleasure, Tom.
And J. Wynn Russick is here in addition. She was the theater critic for the Baltimore Sun for more than two decades, and for the last several years, she has been covering the theater scene for us here at WYPR, first on The Morning Show and now here on Midday. Hey, Judy.
Glad to be here, Tom.
So, Kwams, there's this new building that you're unearthing. You're going to be opening it back up officially in March, although part of the building's open now so folks can get into the Pearlstone Theater for the current production. What are your aspirations for this physical space? How's the physical space going to change what theater, the experience of theater is going to be at Center Stage?
Well, first of all, and I loved your introduction that everybody else is doing their places up, so why shouldn't we?
It's our turn.
Correct. So first of all, it's just keeping up with the Joneses. Really, period. End of explanation. But also, I think, actually, when I arrived here, and I think the board were really quite astute on this, they knew that the facility needed looking at. You know, our HVAC system was relatively ancient, and and many parts of the theatre just wasn't working as good as it should. And so really, I think part of the idea was to make sure that the building was fit for purpose for the 21st century. Interestingly, I think the one space that hasn't really been looked at very much, it's had an upgrade in terms of some equipment, is the Pearlstone. And so when audience
which
members...
Which is
the theatre downstairs,
right.
Absolutely. But the new head theatre has had a radical
and
redo.
And that's the one up on the fourth floor.
Absolutely. That's now multi-configurable, a much closer experience with much better acoustics. There's a new lobby out in front of that that's going to be fascinating. I mean, the fourth floor, I think, is pretty damn tremendous. And we have a brand new education suite. Before, our education facilities had to kind of jump around and work around our show producing schedule. And now they'll have their own space and they'll have their own agenda in a way that they couldn't have before. But ultimately, I think I wanted, when I first walked into Center Stage, I hated that the doors felt locked 24/7, that the box office was sat behind bulletproof glass, that you walked in and that the space felt quite closed. And I think what we're aiming to do is to just open it all up, is open it so that when people walk in, that they feel that this is a club that they want to be part of, that we've redecorated the home in the way that you're supposed to every 10 years to make it feel modern, fresh, and service. Really good artists that want to come and work in environments that feel progressive.
Yeah. And Gavin, I mean, anybody who's had the experience of just, painting their living room or, buying new furniture for the dining room knows that you get a spring in your step when you've got new digs. And I can imagine that you and the folks at the theater, you've been there a long time, and some of the other of your colleagues have been there a long time too, in that same building with all those little, quirky, funky, idiosyncratic things of that building. It has the potential, at least, to really give new impetus to imagination and creativity and artistry, doesn't it?
Absolutely it does. I think the planning conversations alone, which probably took double the time the actual construction will have taken, were tremendously catalytic of inspiration and expectation and hope. Not everything could happen, but it did. But, you know, you're talking to an audience in Baltimore, many of whom live in historic old houses. So a lot of people in town know there's pros and cons, right? You have all those wonderful, quirky, historical bits and pieces, which are part of the character of working in a, living in a space that was from the 1850s. And then you have all the nuisances, and it's nice to upgrade there too.
Sure.
So I think we've kept a lot of the best of the former and tried to fix the latter.
Yeah, and Judy Russick, I mean, what are we to make of all of these new buildings really in these last few years? Every Man Single Carriage, Chesapeake Shakespeare, and Center Stage. I mean, is this indicative of a theater scene that is in fact expanding, growing, more vibrant than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15
years ago? Oh, absolutely,
ago?
Without a question. And it's growing and burgeoning on every level, which Center Stage indicates sort of on the top most professional level, but you have a great increase in the DIY, the do-it-yourself, smaller theaters. I think success in theater breeds more success in theater. People go to plays at one theater, they're moved to go to another one. One of the things that has me most excited about the redevelopment of the space at Center Stage is that you are adding a third performance space, a 99-seat theater. And I know that all your literature says that this is for younger audiences and more family programming. As a theater critic, personally, I'm hoping it's also for a development of new work, that maybe some of your play labs and workshops and reading, stage readings might take place there. Am I right?
Yeah.
I hope.
Because adding a third space that is considerably smaller than either the Head Theater or the Pearlstone is purposeful. And so why make a small theater? What do you gain from that?
Well, I think Judy kind of hit it on the head. It was really important for me that we have a space where economically we can put on the best of the new and develop the kind of work that many theaters in New York perform and across the country, actually, where they can develop work and they don't have the cost problem of putting it into their season and playing for 4 weeks. So you can put it into a smaller space and you can afford to do the more cutting edge work. So really, that space, you know, every time someone builds something new, we try to make it everything for everyone. I don't think that's quite what we're going to try and do. I think it is for a different demographic. And that demographic actually doesn't even mean age. It means the kind of theater goer that's adventurous, the kind of theater goer who wants to see the unconventional. And sometimes that lends itself to age, but actually, you know, it's that's not a dictate. So really,
but that's the kind of work that you're not going to put in the Pearlstone Theater with its 500 and something seats,
correct?
Right? Because
correct.
It's not going to attract 500 people a pop,
a night.
And you don't have to do it for 6 weeks in a row. You can do it for three performances or something.
Absolutely, over two weekends, I think sometimes it will be thinking about programming that space. But also, you know, I think, you know, and of course, I probably sound a bit like this because I'm British, but also I believe that as the State Theatre of Maryland, we shouldn't only speak to one demographic, that the theatre has to be attracted to everyone. And Access for All is right at the core of what we're doing, from the work we do with CS Digital to the work that we're going to do in our 99-seater. And we think that, you know, I think when young audiences or adventurous audiences think, I want to go and see some theatre that pushes me, they might think of going to Single Carrot. And I think that that's great. I also want them to think about us. I want them to think that we too can produce work that speaks to them and speaks to their aesthetic. Now, that may be smaller in number, which is why we built a theatre that can economically and aesthetically hold that.
Yeah. And Gavin, you're also taking theater making outside of the building. You're putting it on the web. You're putting it in funky spaces. You did one just last month at the Carousel in the Inner Harbor. You've been to the train station in this program called Right Now, Play Later. And right is spelled as playwright, W-R-I-G-H-T. Tell us about that program and how that
Absolutely.
Works.
Though I would say, Tom, and you may be aware of this, Judy certainly is, that we've been sort of exploring the theatricality of unusual spaces and being out of the building for a while now. We did a wonderful
yes.
ping pong play up at the wind-up space, for instance, and have sort of been exploring the container play was done in a container, in a shipping container at the Book Fest, for instance. Anyway, so right now, Play Later is a fusion of a number of these ideas. I'd been cherishing the idea of being able to have a theater food truck that would truck around the city and bring theater to people who wouldn't even come to our building for a while. But in while we're waiting for that to happen, right now Play Later draws on sort of ideas of the brilliant Susan Laurie Parks and her Watch Me Work, where she would sit and write plays in
Playwright in New York. She would sit in there and people and could actually watch her write her play.
Doing her writing of her play, if that meant sitting and doing her Facebook or thinking for a while, whatever it was that. Caricature artists who will do a quick sketch for you as you come by, right? We've sort of seen those. Poetry, on-the-spot poetry, all kinds of fusion of this. And giving people access to what we implemented called Write Right Now, again, the W-R-I-G-H-T, which was a playwright in our lobby taking prompts and suggestions of plays and writing them on the spot for patrons.
And full disclosure, one of those playwrights a couple of years ago was my daughter, Miranda Rose Hall, who is a playwright, getting her MFA in playwriting in graduate school as we speak.
She really helped develop the program.
So she sat in the lobby. Give her prompts.
That's right.
Before the play started, they would go in to see Act One, and by the time they came out for intermission, Miranda had written a little play.
By the time they went home, at the end of the play.
Yeah.
And she might take six or a dozen in an evening. But what that always missed for me was the performance element, right? Writing a play is writing a blueprint, but what that misses from theater is the performance element. And so what we've done with Right Now, Play Later is add the play component. And so the next round is actually starting today. We're soliciting prompts via social media. This is partly a social media and online and digital endeavor just as much to pull theater into that and that into theater.
Right. It's #WNPL, Right Now, yes. Play Later.
Uh-huh. And this month's theme is collection. So people send their prompts in. Tomorrow the playwrights will have the day to take whatever prompts they want and write at least three short plays based on those. Wednesday, the public will get to weigh in again. We put those out and they get to vote via Twitter or Facebook or whatever on which one of the plays by each playwright they want to see performed. And Thursday, we gather actors together and with a quick rehearsal, we go to some pop-up location around town and they perform them and they're live streamed out.
You're doing these 4 months in a row. You started in October, November, and today you're announcing that the subject for December and for this Thursday is collections.
Yes.
The other subjects you've taken up are transportation and revolution, and you're going to do another one in January.
We will.
Right? So people send prompts then around the theme of collections. So Kwame Kwayarma, what's the difference then between the subject, which is collections, and the prompt that you as a playwright would get if you were one of the playwrights that's going to be doing this for Thursday?
I don't know, actually, and I'm going to bounce it back to Gavin.
Because I don't know either. I've always things. I'm so glad that I have this, this reservoir of thespian erudition in front of me, because there's two things I want to ask you. First is that. What's the difference between a prompt and a subject? And the second is, why does playwright get spelled W-R-I-G-H-T instead of W-R-I-T-E? Okay. And then if you do, you'll have a chance to move on to our grand prize round. but first, so what the prompt and the subject, what's the difference?
Yes. So the subject is the topic around which the plays are generally gathering or that the prompts are responding to, understood in whatever way people want to. But what we want to do is translate that into something dynamic, an active question or idea or circumstance or situation that a playwright can, in a page or three, actually turn into a piece of theater and piece of drama, right? So if the theme is collection, the prompt might be something like, there's a knock on the door, they're here to collect the money, what are they collecting for? Or it might be, you're called to Lost and Found, what are you going to get? Or it might be, something big just happened, how long does it take you to collect your thoughts and how do you collect your thoughts? So different understandings of collection we might prompt. And then people will answer that in whatever way, right? We pose those questions to them. They write in and say, oh, the IRS man is here because my grandfather never paid the taxes on his sausage farm or something. And then the playwright will construct a circumstance based on that.
All right. Well, we will collect our thoughts for a couple of seconds here while we take a quick break, and we will come back, and we're actually going to hear some examples from some of the Right Now, Play Later episodes that you did previously. Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, is the artistic director of Center Stage. Gavin Witt is the dramaturg and the associate director. We are joined as well by the Midday Theater critic, Jay Wynn Russick. We're talking about their Right Now, Play Later initiative and other goings-on at the State Theater of Maryland. You can join us with your questions, comments, and observations about Center Stage, about the scene of theater here in Baltimore, and about the future of audiences and artists in the theatrical world. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Midday at WIPR.org is our email address. Our Twitter handle, at Midday Tom Hall. Stick around. We'll be back in a flash. Thank you, Nathan, and welcome back. It's midday here on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, a conversation about water rates in the city of Baltimore. They've gone up over the last 10 years, and they're going up even more over the next several years. Joan Jacobson has written a report on water and sewer rates for the Able Foundation. She'll be here along with Roger Colton, who studies the way cities bill their customers for utilities. As well, Susan Francis will be here. She's a lawyer who's worked with low-income clients around this issue. What we pay and what we spend for water tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, we're getting an update on the renovations at Baltimore's Center Stage and talking about some of their various plays and programs. Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, is the artistic director of Center Stage. Gavin Witt is the dramaturg and the associate director, and we're joined as well by Midday theater critic Jay Wynn Russick. The Center Stage building on Calvert Street is undergoing a big makeover. Their latest show is in the Pearlstone Theater, while the rest of the building continues to be renovated and improved. The show is called Les Liaisons Dangereuses. You are welcome to join us. Our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at WIPR.org, and our Twitter handle, at Midday Tom Hall. So, Gavin, getting back to this Right Now, Play Later initiative, tell me, or Kwame, I think you actually volunteered that you know the difference between a playwright, which is spelled P-L-A-Y, W-R-I-G-H-T, and then someone who writes plays, obviously, W-R-I-T-E-S's them. So what is the difference, and why is it spelled wrong? Is this like some secret handshake thing that you theater guys know?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's a secret handshake, but as it was explained to me, it's about the craft. And so a wheelwright, for instance, is spelled W and then W. And it is about the craft of making the play rather than the literal writing of the play. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. It's plausible. I'm not willing to accept it, completely, but it's a plausible explanation.
I don't say that I was the originator of the idea, just that I actually have bought into it. As a playwright, when it was first explained to me in that way, was that it made I felt actually that my job was not just about chronicling, but was about structuring, was about crafting, not just splurging onto
shaping
the page.
It's a craft.
Correct. It's a craft, a skill, and something that you don't just learn, but something that has to be passed and negotiated, and then you have to know why you're doing it. And it's something later that you hand on.
All right. So, Gavin, you're a dramaturg, which is T-U-R-G. Is it dramaturge or dramaturg?
Dramaturg.
With a hard
with
G.
With a hard G. Comes out of German. Not to be confused, notwithstanding some dictionaries, with dramaturge with an E at the end of it, which is, in fact, to get to this, the French word for playwright. And dramaturg actually is the etymological source of this mysterious spelling of playwright that has you so exercised. It's really a literal translation of dramaturg, which means the reeker or shaper of story. And one who reeks, and this is really the sense that Kwame's talking about, this crafting, W-R-E-A-K-E-R, a person who reeks is a wright, and things they make have been wrought, well wrought, ideally. So you try to be a play wreaker and not a play wrecker.
Okay, and at this point of the program, I just curl up in a fetal position in the corner and just let you work it all out. That's
but it is, it's dramaturgy, and it's not a D.
It's not.
But it's a hard G. Uh-huh.
So Judy, then, like folks like my daughter across this great land of ours who are getting playwriting degrees, they're getting playwriting degrees that are W-R-I-T-I-N-G degrees, are they not? Or are they getting R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G degrees? Anyone know?
They're getting the ones with the W, you know, because that's where the W is right, because they're being taught how to wrought, how to make it wrought.
Very good.
And how to get it right.
And how to get it right.
You can never be taught how to get it right.
Don't get it right, get it written.
Yeah, don't get it right, get it written. Speaking of getting it written, in this Right Now, Play Later initiative that you guys have done since October, you did one in October, one in November. Let's listen to a little excerpt. This is a performance that took place at the Carousel down in the Inner Harbor. This is a play called Spin, and the playwright is a woman named Tegan McLeod. The actor that we'll hear in this excerpt is named Anne Turiano. So the subject was revolution, right?
Yes.
The subject is revolution, and the prompt for this play, Spin, by Tegan McLeod, came from a fan of Center Stage on Twitter or Facebook or something. And here's the prompt. The spinning starts when there is nothing to do but to do something. So Spin by Tegan McLeod.
Maybe my panic attacks are my body's way of asking every question my mind can muster before it starts catching and misfiring. Before I speak to you in a whisper without knowing we've had this conversation 7 times. I don't want to forget. Please. I don't ever want to lose this. Right here, this. Please tell me. I will remember this.
So, Jaywin Rusick, what do we learn, or what is the point, I suppose, of making the playwrights compose these plays like in 24 hours? This is not something they're spending, you know, 2 months, 2 years, 8 years writing. They get the subject, they get the prompt, and they have a deadline that's very soon thereafter to produce a short play. Why that exercise? What's good about that?
Well, there's several things that are good from a writer's point of view. And this is a kind of exercise that is often done in graduate schools. I know Paula Vogel does what she calls bake-offs, and she gives her students several ingredients, and they have 24 hours, in that case, to write a full-length play. I've done that for her. It's really something. And one of the reasons she does that, and one of the motivations for this, I think, is that it actually is very freeing for the playwright because you don't have time to edit yourself. So it can become a kind of almost automatic writing, and I mean that in the best sense, like an artist in the Dada period, where you don't have all the constraints of, for example, who's going to produce this? How are we going to stage this? Can we have this imaginary character? It's just, you know, hit the ground running. And from the playwright's point of view, I think that's very useful. What Center Stage has added to that is bringing in the audience and making the audience an integral part of the playwriting process, which I think is a very exciting element. There are theaters in Baltimore, small theater companies, that have done various 24-hour iterations of things. Former run-of-the-mill theater has done it. Single Carrot has done it. Each iteration tends to be a little bit different. For Center Stage, I think that including social media probably is one way to bring in a younger audience and actually make them part of the theater, make them a little bit part of that W-R-I-G-H-T element of playwriting.
And Kwame Kwame Arma, the use of video and the use of broadcasting this, it's broadcast live on Facebook, it's on Periscope, you can access it anytime, either in the moment or anytime thereafter, seems like a natural for you. I mean, you were a TV star in Britain before you came over here, and you've done a lot even at Center Stage with video. I mean, the project you did with the monologues about America.
Yeah, My America's
My
One
America.
Too. Yes.
You know, so you are really getting the theater out of the theater. And what's the long-term aspiration there?
I think the long-term aspiration is that I didn't come into theater to only speak to the 4% that actually come into the walls. That I think that any of us who are in quote-unquote the high arts wish them to be the popular arts, which means sometimes you have to meet the people wherever they are in the continuum. And so we are in a digital age, in an age where people's iPhones and iPads are an integral part of their life. And I think it's really important that the notion of live is continually being updated, and that we in theatre are aware of it and dance with it. Facebook Live tells us live is what we make it. And so I think it's why it's really important for us when if we are saying that we want everybody, wherever they are, to feel invited to the party, that we participate both in the building, in the plays that we produce in Calvert. We've got our mobile classic unit, our CS mobile unit, that goes in last season and this season and here on, will go and play to what we might call the disenfranchised, not the prisons and the units or support structures for the city socially. And it's important for us, not because we want them to come to center stage, but to say that art is for all and we will take it to you where you are, and to operate within the sphere of video and digital. We will meet you where you are. I think that's important if we truly believe that theater is for everyone, not just for the enfranchised or the elite who've managed to either go to drama school or study it at university, or can afford to come and partake on a Wednesday through Sunday or Tuesday through Sunday.
And Gavin Witt, who are the playwrights who are going to be writing on this subject of collections for Thursday?
So those tackling collection, those ready standing by to get info from people, are a wonderful playwright, Marcus Gardley, who's been here at Center Stage before with Dance of the Holy Ghosts. Jenny Connell Davis, who's another alum of our Hot Desk resident writing program that Miranda was part of. And, I just blanked on the other one.
Well, that's two.
There are three of them. There are three.
Rick Perry moment. There are three. Yes, it's always three.
And each of them then writes.
Oh, KJ Sanchez.
Okay, KJ Sanchez. KJ Sanchez. So they write. Each of them writes two plays. Is that right?
Each writes at least three.
Oh, at least three plays.
They're welcome to write more.
So you end up with a total of nine plays.
Yes.
And then the audience on social media votes for the ones that they like.
On Wednesday, we give them very, very quick capsule, like 5-word lines, descriptions of each of the three plays for each playwright. And then they vote on which one of the three for each of those playwrights they want to have performed.
And so each playwright has a play performed on Thursday at 1:00.
Yes.
And you will reveal where the location of that is Thursday morning sometime.
Yes.
Right. All right. So is this then, I mean, some of these, Marcus Gardley, for example, is in a very established name in theatrical circles. I mean, he's a marvelous playwright. Is this then a mix between established writers and emerging up-and-coming types? Is this a farm system at all for you? Are you checking people out in this way as a possibility of, you know, maybe engaging them for a longer work somewhere down the line?
I would say in this case, partly because of the nature of the writing that we're asking them to do, it is less intended as a farm system and certainly intended to provide a broad range of voices from truly emergent to as established as we could secure, and diverse and eclectic in every other way that we could balance it out to be, including last month we had playwriting teams and invited them, some of them, as you'll hear, to write some songs for that. But the other piece is that because the right now version of this has been based in the lobby was our opportunity to bring in local writers, again, new, established, emerging, whatever, and develop those relationships. This was a chance to broaden nationally and actually internationally. We had submissions from Chile last month as part of it.
Right. Folks can tune into this from anywhere that they've got internet.
So this lets us broaden the writers to be a kind of a global reach.
All right, let's listen to the song you mentioned. This is, again, from November's iteration of Right Now, Play Later. The subject was revolution. The prompt for this was a doorman in a building observes tenants entering and exiting through a revolving door. And you got Stephen Dietz, who wrote a song in this case called Revolutions, a Song. We'll hear it performed here by Josh Ide Reese and Center Stage's WNPL Acting Company.
But if time is a door that spins round on the floor, I fear it will never end. Blue and red, tear and red. If time is a door that spins on the floor, we're gonna be in for a long, 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 long.
So you even get a song as part of the mix. I mean, that's and you hear that this was taped outside. This was down at the Carousel in the Inner Harbor. So you hear the ambient noise of, you know, the wind rushing through the willows.
And they're done script in hand. The actors get them at about an hour or 2 hours beforehand. They're done script in hand. It's all part of a kind of ephemeral immediacy that connects to what Judy was saying about the automatic writing. But the idea is that the entire experience feel a little like the kind of pop-up theater. And the spontaneity of it that emerges from the idea of the patron, and can we produce theater as quickly as possible and see what comes of it.
And it's literally street theater. It's going back to the street theater tradition.
Guerrilla theater, yeah.
Celebrating sites around Baltimore while we're itinerant. We thought it would be a nice chance to do that.
All right, Gavin Witt, he's the dramaturg and associate director of Center Stage. Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, is the artistic director. J. Wynn Russick is the former theater critic for the Baltimore Sun, who now reviews all things thespian for Midday. You are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780. After we take a break, midday@wipr.org is our email address and our Twitter handle at @MiddayTomHall. So before we do take that break, on Mondays here on Midday, we read the names of the people who lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. A researcher named Ellen Worthing has been compiling a list of Baltimore homicide victims for the past 15 years. We are indebted to her for the data that she posts on her blog, CHAMS page. We also consult the Baltimore Sun's list of homicides, which they've been compiling since 2007. As of today, 302 people have been the victims of a homicide in our city. Hundreds more have been victims of non-fatal shootings. Six people were homicide victims in Baltimore last week. Antonio Davis, age 23. Howard Banks, age 45. Thomas Carter, age 42. Brian Bazemore, age 41. Keith Ramsey, age 32. And Tavon Coakley. He was 23 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about all things theatrical with part of the leadership team at Baltimore's Center Stage. Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, is the artistic director. Gavin Witt is the dramaturg and associate director. And we are joined as well by Midday theater critic J. Wynn Russick. You are welcome to join us at 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. We just listened to a little excerpt from Center Stage's production production of Marley, which is a piece that Kwame Kwe Arma composed and wrote. It is now working under the title One Love, the Bob Marley Musical, and it will open at the Birmingham Rep Theater in the UK this year. This excerpt that we heard was sung by Mitchell Brunings, who played the lead at center stage. So, Kwame, give us a little update on Marley, which is now called One Love.
Yes.
Pretty exciting stuff. You debuted it here in Baltimore, and now it's taking flight.
Yeah. I'm, you know, we built it here, and I'm really proud of that. And then some commercial producers came over, many, and part of the plan always was, actually, is that I wanted to serve the local, the national, and the international to make Baltimore Center Stage's reputation, to extend the steeples, as it were. And so I'm really pleased that this, as well as One Night in Miami from our 2015 season, has begun that kind of international presence. Our commercial producers said, Kwame, jump back in, do some work on it, which I have. I think it's a deeper cut now. It's very interesting. Then I pat myself on the back for negotiating the travails of all of the rights and all of the people who have influence on trying to get a production around Bob Marley. And I think I negotiated.
And you work closely with the Marley family.
Correct, right. In order to get it on. And I think that it was a great success here, and it will be one of the greatest experiences of my life. But I think when I was asked to go back in, I had to look at myself and say, what didn't this production have, or our production have? And I think one of the things was I was a little protective of Bob. And I don't mean that in somehow I'm now going to be sensational, but I think I've just gone in and done a deeper cut. I've challenged myself to kind of talk a little bit more about things that happened in his life and to frame it more politically. So, we've did workshops, and now it's going to open up at Birmingham Rep in March and then bounce into the West End.
And the West End in London.
And the West End is the equivalent
of Broadway here in New York.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're doing that. So
for example, are there different songs? Did you take some songs out, put some new songs in?
Yeah.
Is it longer, shorter? Is it structured the same way for the folks who saw it when it was here?
Yes, I think the structure for our production, again, which I was very proud of, is really kind of like based around Bob performing the songs in concert or in rehearsal. And I think I've tried to make it more of a standard musical, in that there are more songs that are happening where people are speaking to each other. And the rule of thumb in a musical is you sing when you have to, when words won't suffice. And so I think I've tried to do that a bit more and craft it more. It's still a play with music, but it kind of masquerades as a musical in a far more rudimentary fashion. There are more songs. There are different songs. There's some songs I've taken out. And there's a whole section really at the beginning that is Bob pre-1976. So we're kind of looking at how he got to be the man that he was. So structure,
and you did this
different
international casting call to end up with this guy, Mitchell Brunings, who was incredible. I mean, you looked at him and you closed your eyes. First of all, you thought, oh my gosh, Bob Marley has come back from wherever. But how did you cast this? Will Mr. Brunings be doing it again?
Mr. Brunings will be doing it again.
Excellent.
Which is
because it really is tough to imagine anybody else who can nail Bob Marley the way he does.
You know, it's very interesting. We've casted it out of Britain. And one of the things that sometimes people say is, but he's a singer, not an actor. And though I thought he did a grand job. And the ego of the director and the writer comes into play a little. Because ultimately...
And you were both.
And I both, right? And when you have an actor who can act, or a trained actor, then subtext and the depth of character comes to play. And the play feels much stronger, even with exactly the same lines. And so people were a bit afraid of that. And they're going, oh, my God, but are you going to go again with someone who is not an actor? And my senses and my ego, the work I had to do on my ego, was actually, are people coming to see the Bob Marley musical for the book written by Kwame Kwe Arma, or to hear Bob Marley songs. And ultimately, I believe, as much as I'd like it to be the former, it is the latter. They're coming to hear Bob's songs and to see Bob's story. And so Mitchell is perfect for that. And the rest of the cast, we found, as I've said, in Britain. And I'm really excited.
It opens in Birmingham in March. Judy Russett?
Another thing that I think is so appropriate about this show going to the UK now, unless you've made this big a change, but at least when it was at Center Stage, it focused on a couple years in the 70s when Bob Marley was in kind of self-imposed exile. Absolutely. In England. So you're kind of taking him home in a way.
Yes, totally and utterly. And that has not changed because that was one of my original scaffolds. But what's really beautiful for me is with Marley and or One Love, as it's now called, and with One Night in Miami, is that in Britain, people are saying, oh, what is this place, Baltimore Center Stage that
right.
is creating not one, but two hits. One Night in Miami was a huge hit in London and possibly will still transfer to the West End.
And you brought that production to Center Stage.
Absolutely.
Last season. And that, refresh our memories about that. That's an incredible imagined meeting of
Malcolm X.
Giants.
Yeah. It's a real meeting of when Muhammad Ali beat Sonny Liston and then went back to the hotel room with Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, and Jim Brown.
And so the playwright has imagined what that
what
conversation
happened,
was.
Absolutely,
in that
what
hotel
the conversation in that hotel room. And again, it was wonderful to introduce Britain to the work that we're generating. And it was so funny actually that some of the press were saying, "So what's next out of Center Stage?" They went to our website and said, "Again, so is it Toni Morrison's jazz that you're going to bring over next? Is it?" And that's what
you're directing later this
absolutely.
Season.
Absolutely, and
in
that
Baltimore.
Was really important. The local. The national and the international.
It's the theater biz. What have you done for me lately, baby?
Right?
Yeah, that's it. Let's go to the phones. Mike in Hamden, welcome to Midday with Kwame Clay Armagh, Gavin Witt, and Judy Russett.
Hi, thank you. I've been an usher and a docent there for a long time, and I just wanted to mention the other aspect in the theater. There's a managing director who gets the money and puts it together and makes the things happen. A couple years ago, when Stephen Richard came to work at Center Stage, I just thought there's only good things happen when he comes around because he was responsible for that tremendous rebuilding of Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. And then he joined us, and I think it was not a coincidence that we were able to put together a package to do this rebuilding down at Center Stage.
Yeah, well, thank you for your call, Mike. That's great to give a shout-out to Stephen. And Kwame, you and Stephen worked
thank
you very closely.
For your service, sir. Without a shadow of a doubt, you are a most loyal and brilliant contributor to all that we do at Center Stage.
And Stephen has retired, and
we've
had a deja vu all over again because Michael Ross, so who was the previous executive director, managing director, is now back working with you, Kwame. And so he'll be the one to.
And it's really, really exciting to have Michael back.
Yeah.
It's a joy. And Stephen and I had a wonderful relationship, and it was a wonderful time. But to have Michael back, it really feels like it's time to, fire. Yeah. Fire will arrive in the house in a most positive way.
And Judy Russick, I mean, when these plays that are developed here in Baltimore, either written by Kwame or directed by Kwame and brought to the international arena, what does that do for the theater in particular, Center Stage, and the city of Baltimore and the theater scene here in Baltimore? I mean, it is a big deal, isn't it, that stuff that's originating here ends up in the West End in London and perhaps in Broadway.
It's a very big deal. It's a very big deal. For American regional theaters in recent decades, the move has often been from that regional theater to New York, maybe to Broadway. Center Stage is taking a slightly different route because, I believe, of you, Kwame. And the two theaters that you've been working with, in case some of the listeners aren't familiar with them, the Dunmar Warehouse is a theater that it's not a West End theater, but it has transferred numerous shows to the West End, London's Broadway. It has 13 Tony Award nominations alone for Broadway transfers. So it's a very big name. And Birmingham Repertory Theater, though it's a little farther away geographically, is a really storied theater that produced, launched careers of actors like Laurence Olivier and Albert Finney and Paul Scofield. So these are not small potatoes by any means. And then the other thing that has happened in recent years in New York in particular is that shows move from London to New York, and they come with this added imprimatur of having been successes in Britain. And so I think it is quite possible that some of these shows that go across the pond from center stage, and as Kwame said, a lot of the write-ups in London did mention center stage. It's quite possible, I would hope, that some of them will jump back and that center stage may perhaps develop an international reputation before its national reputation is built up.
Yeah, because I think of like the Baltimore Symphony, you know, which plays lots and lots of concerts here in Strathmore, but they really feel like they put themselves on the map when they tour Europe or they tour Asia or they go to other places and let folks know about it. We just got a little bit of time left. Gavin, tell us a little bit about Les Liaisons Dangereuses, the Dangerous Liaisons, which is the current show at the Pearlstone in the almost finished renovated building.
That's right. Come in through the construction lobby and imagine what the rest is going to be. Well, this is a revival of Christopher Hampton's much-produced 1985 adaptation of the 1785 Lalo novel. So an epistolary novel rendered onto stage and given gorgeous, gorgeous life. We had our first post-show discussion and audiences are thrilled to be there.
And pretty dicey stuff. This one isn't one for the kids, is it?
Not for the kids.
Yeah. Well, it's great to see all of you guys. Thank you so much. Break a leg with the rest of the theater renovation and the rest of the season. I appreciate you all being here. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, is the artistic director of Center Stage. Gavin Witz, the theater's associate director. J. Wynn Russick is Midday's theater critic. You can hear Judy's reviews every Thursday afternoon on this program. She'll share her thoughts on the current production at Center Stage this Thursday. That production, as we just said, is an adaptation of a scandalous 18th century novel called Les Liaisons Dangereuses. It's in the Pearlstone Theater on Calvert Street until the Friday before Christmas, while the rest of the building continues to be made over, and we will, of course, keep you posted on the developments on that front. This week, you can also catch the latest iteration of Center Stage's Right Now, Play Later program, Thursday at 1 o'clock, online and live at a location that will be announced later, so stay tuned. The subject announced online and today here on Midday is Collections. You can send in your prompts for the playwrights at #WNPL, and the playwrights will have the next 24 hours to write their plays, and on Wednesday, you can vote for your favorite among those plays, and on Thursday, the live performance will be streamed on the web. Details at the Center Stage website. Come to wypr.org/midday for a link to more information. That'll do it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, if you live in the city of Baltimore, you're paying more for your water than ever before, and you're being billed more frequently. The city plans to spend $2 billion of our money over the next 6 years upgrading our water system. We'll talk about what that means tomorrow with Joan Jacobson, who's written a new report about water rates for the Able Foundation here in Baltimore. Roger Colton, he's an expert in utility billing systems. Who knew that there were such things as experts in utility billing systems? But there are, and he's going to be here. And Susan Francis, she's a lawyer who works with low and middle income families to help them figure out how to pay their bills when their rates go up. That's tomorrow on Midday, online and on the radio. Thanks to The Diz for supplying lunch today for our ravenous guests. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. Theater folks never turn down a free meal. It features signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. Thanks for making Midday part of your day today. You can find us right here every day at noon. Until tomorrow, on behalf of the entire Midday team, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.